Hello and welcome to the Texas Tribune Tribcast for the first week of December 2010. I'm reporter Elise Hugh, joined by CEO and Editor-in-Chief Evan Smith.
Hello.
Managing Editor Ross Ramsey.
Howdy.
And Reeve Hamilton, who is sitting in for Ben Philpott today. Hi, Reeve.
Hey.
Today we're talking about the freshman class, or the incoming class, right, to the Texas House. This is one of the largest classes we've seen in decades. The speaker race, the ongoing speaker's race there, and potential cuts to higher education in the next session. Ross, I guess we can both start on this topic. Orientation's going on this
week. They're in orientation this week, so they're, you know, this is rush week. They're running around and people are telling them all kinds of stuff, and they have to discern which part of it to believe and which part of it not to believe. There was a media panel this morning telling them how to deal with the media, and it was us, and we were telling them, you know, the media is kind to you and great and you should talk to them all the time. So somebody else will come in after us and say, okay, let me tell you about the media, really. They're getting a whole week of this. And I guess the significant part you covered, this is the part that really matters.
Well, to the members.
Yeah, to the members, right.
Is the seniority draw. So
it's like a Harry Potter sorting hat?
Right. I really enjoy this. This is my third time to cover the old ping pong ball draw. And what happens is there's
ping pong
balls.
You really are a sick individual.
Yeah, this is just kind of fun, and it's very visual, so it's good for television. So there are these ping pong balls with the State of Texas seal on them, on the front, and then a number on the back. And this year there were 37. There's actually 38 incoming members once District 44 Edmund Kemple's seat is filled.
Well, there's actually more than that because you're not counting senators.
Oh, right.
Right. 37 incoming freshmen. There'll be an incoming freshman in Kemple's seat. There's two incoming senators. So, yeah.
Who are the incoming senators?
Rodriguez from El Paso and Birdwell from Granbury.
But wasn't Birdwell already in?
But yeah, he hadn't been through this freshman orientation.
And so he has to draw his ball.
Well,
there's no way for that not to sound funny.
Actually, in the Senate, he doesn't have to draw because he was elected before Rodriguez's seniority is established.
Indeed. Yeah.
Okay. It's default. Right. So,
what a relief for him.
They draw these numbers. They draw the balls. Charlie Guerin runs this as the chairman of House Administration. And your seniority order that you draw your freshman year continues. It follows with you through all
and
the
so
years
what,
you
what
are
does
in
it
the
mean?
Texas House. It gives you, it determines the order you choose your office space, your seat on the House floor, your parking space, and then there's various times where seniority might come up.
Does it have anything to do with anything substantive?
Yeah, there are positions on each of the really big important committees that are based on seniority. So there are a couple of seniority seats on appropriations. There's a couple of seniority seats on ways and means, and when they get down line, to get 8 or 10 years in, you know, if four or five of them all ask for the same seat, you know, tie goes to the most senior, even if it's the one who pulled, you know, ball number three instead of ball number seven.
So Rodney Anderson, who beat Kirk England in Dallas. Grand Prairie. And he is a title company vice president or something. We met him. He came up by the office here at some point to see us. Very nice guy.
That's correct.
He is number one.
Yep.
He drew the first ball.
And the first thing he tweeted was, I drew number one. Now what? So this will be. I hope he listens
to this.
You're
not the only one wondering.
Classic freshman.
Right.
Fashion.
And so who drew number 38?
That's what I don't recall.
Don't say Zedler. Don't say Zedler.
And the folks who are returning get to keep their seniority.
So Zedler and Boris Miles
and Murphy,
Jim Murphy,
all have seniority from before. Jim Murphy was funny this morning. He was saying, you know, I'm going to tell everybody my freshman session was the best 4 years of my life in the legislature.
Yeah.
He was here for 2 years, got beat, came back. So.
So it's an interesting class. I mean, there's a lot of them.
Yeah,
you know,
what's your objective? You know, the easy thing to say is, oh, you know, these people are all just these. It's a bunch of misfits. They're all, you know, not people who you would normally see in politics. It was a weird year. This is the bar scene in Star Wars. You know,
right?
But in fact, they're not that, right?
Well, they're, you know, House members are always, Gib Lewis, who was a former speaker, always had this great line that you look at the House and you think maybe some of these people look goofy, and you go to their districts and you find out, nah, they're representatives.
They're pretty much, they get to go.
It's like it is. You know, it's a real mixed bag. And what's always interesting at this point is that your impression or our impression up to now is formed by very positive and very negative campaign ads. And just these sort of distorted views one way or the other, and you get them in a room and you go, oh, they, you know, they're pretty normal. They're pretty normal. Now you'll find out on certain kinds of issues that they're not as normal as normal people are.
But are they any less normal than the people that are already there?
No.
Right. So, I mean, exactly. The standard is not a big jump up.
You know, if you've covered a lot of these, like me, you can remember when the people that are now the statesmen of Texas and the stateswomen of Texas, I remember when that one was still had eggshell on his head, just popped out of the egg. And
yeah, I didn't know where you were going with that, yeah. Actually.
You know, I mean, they're just like a, you know,
ball. They used to have giant egg fights in the house.
It's the stage of puppydom where they're just now opening their eyes. I mean, they're just, you know, they've come down here.
Right.
Everybody's been telling them all kinds of stuff. You're a terrible person or you're the most wonderful person on the planet. The most popular one of them all in terms of the number of votes he got was Lyle Larson. Just an anomaly of that district in San Antonio. He's a former county commissioner. He got 56,000 votes. There's 24 million people in the state. Nobody knows who you are. Everybody who knows more than two
of these
people.
Who was elected? Okay, but which of them was elected with the least number of votes?
It wasn't one of the – it's usually an unopposed person. It's probably Lozano. J.M. Lozano would be my bet, not looking at it. But the point is that nobody knows who they are. Everybody who can name more than two House members works within a mile and a half of that pink building over there. So they're sort of, this is that sort of moment of shock where you go from being most popular kid in the class to, well, that really doesn't mean so much. Let's see
now
what you got.
Now you're one of 150.
See what you got, right. Yeah.
So and isn't there a tradition that freshmen don't get to speak or something or get their underwear hung on hooks? What's the
first time you stand up to speak?
There's hazing.
You have
the choice between
right.
those two.
You get hazed like crazy. And
in fact, Reeve is talking to you now, hanging from a hook.
That's right. Reeve, who's on the hook over in the corner. That's
exactly it's a hell of a boom mic, right?
I wanted to be able to speak.
Yeah. So they get up, they can speak.
The advice they get is freshmen should be seen and not heard.
Jerry Madden throws something at your head, you know, right. Something like that.
Yeah, somebody has an old fish.
What happens if that advice isn't followed?
Like with Roland Gutierrez.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, you become, you know, it really is like high school with money. I mean, this is one of those things where you stand up the first time and you open your mouth and everybody forms their first impression. So we've got these 37 people who are about to walk in and give their first impression to all of their classmates. And that's pretty much sticks to you. Not always, but for the most part, that sticks to you forever. Roland Gutierrez is always going to be the guy who's known as, oh, yeah, it's that guy who talked all through his freshman year.
He'll never live that down.
Right.
So what did either of you, well, you were on the panel this morning, right?
Right.
So what did you tell them? What was your advice?
Listen
to the Tripcast.
Well, it was basically a thing about how to work with the media and, you know, what it's like. And I basically told them that we're going to be here the day you're declared class valedictorian and the day that you walk out of the bathroom with toilet paper stuck to your shoe. So it's best to have relationships with the people who are writing about you before either of those things happens. That was sort of the short form.
Although it doesn't prevent us from writing that toilet paper story regardless, right?
No, we might say that they were particularly nice shoes.
Yeah. And so from your perspective as a kind of voyeur, Elise, what was your impression of this?
It seems like it's a class that seems like they've been gelling already in the last couple of days. Right. I talked to a lot of folks who just said they were overwhelmed with how much they had to learn about ethics and just mail and payroll and this and that. Just, you know, that it almost did feel a little bit like the first week of school when you're getting all your syllabi and all that. Charlie Guerin did pass on some advice.
Not a single one of them said syllabi to you, did they actually?
No. Charlie Guerin's advice, because I asked him, you know, if you had to pass on one piece of advice, it was keep your word. You know, always keep your word. Don't change your vote without letting the person who you're supposed to be backing know first. And the practical advice was just be on time. Though I'm sure that's not very well followed in the Texas House after watching it for a couple sessions. So the other note that will actually seg right into your topic is that Speaker Strauss was seen there this morning working the crowd. And a lot of folks, I overheard a lot of the freshmen say, man, you're just everywhere. I've seen you every day. So, you know, he's just working hard, keeping his relationships up. He seemed to know everyone and address them by name. So he's obviously been doing some
knows their children,
studying.
What grades they're getting in history.
Right.
You
got to
know
right.
everything.
So the speaker's race, you know, ostensibly still on, but the math obviously favors Speaker Strauss.
Did you hear anything out of Strauss's mouth that led you to believe that he was, you know, kind of gigging anybody like, hey, Van Taylor, how's it going?
No.
You know, did
no,
you not, none
not
of that stuff?
I talked to Van Taylor this morning and just sort of off to the side, and he said that he was getting just an illustration of what's happening to these guys. You know, there's a speaker's race coming up. Ken Paxton's running. He's from the same county, Collin County, where Taylor is. And Taylor said he was getting 30 calls a day from constituents inside his district.
In other
not,
words,
not
more,
from people in Austin, not from people in, you
more
know.
Calls a day than Paxton has votes.
Well, you know, right. I went up and covered Taylor's primary race, and I talked to a lot of the Tea Party groups up there, and that was their number one concern.
Speaker's race?
was speakers, and this was even before the primaries. They just did not want someone, because Brian McCall had supported Strauss, and that's the seat he's in now. They did not want, and Brian McCall endorsed
Mabry Jackson.
So they did not want someone supported by Brian McCall who had supported Strauss. Was what the Tea Party were talking
about.
What
you have now is an interesting scenario, I mean, in a series of interesting scenarios, but you have one interesting scenario where the three big Strauss backers who either retired or were defeated in this year, McCall, Merritt, and Delwyn Jones, replaced by three people who have now all backed somebody other than Strauss.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And yet, Elise, Ken Paxton has 10 votes.
Ten counting Ken Paxton.
Ten? I mean, it's not, I mean, I know we all want action. We all want drama. There's not a speaker's race.
Well, yeah, there is.
No, there isn't.
There's Chisholm. Well, he has two.
There isn't.
There's 40 or 45 days, and it's basically this accident. I agree with you that Strauss is the prohibitive favorite. He's got more than 120 votes. Paxton has 10. Chisholm has not declared a single vote other than his own, and it takes only 76 to win.
Somebody said to me yesterday, call me when a prominent committee chairman or a big, you know, kind of veteran member of the House, a Republican who's, you know, kind of not one of these new or, you know, fringy. But
these are basically non-players.
Yeah. Call me when one of those people
deserves
the Strauss. Right. Yeah. Look, the Democratic Party in this Texas is, for all practical purposes, dead, except for the fact that the 51 of them are going to support Strauss and ensure that he becomes Speaker.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And with the 51 of them and just the committee chairman, Strauss gets past 76.
Right. I don't disagree. But he has to, we've said this before, he's going to twist in the wind for a month and a half here.
Right.
It's a particularly dangerous political time.
He's going to spend a bunch of his money on stuff like Drudge Report ads and right. Irving M. Thalberg Lifetime Achievement Award setup videos that get posted on YouTube, you know, with Celine Dion music in the background or some other crap. I
thought that was very well done.
Well, it was well done, but so well done was that Christmassy video that showed Strauss, you know, coming up on the slot machine and the dominoes with Guerin and Cook.
Keffer.
Right. Uh-huh. I mean, look, this has been a true, you know, 21st century speaker's race in the sense that all the tools of the media have been used, from, you know, I Hate Joe Twitter accounts right. to Facebook pages to gather support for Chisholm to YouTube videos. Eight of us are watching this stuff. I mean, nobody else is paying attention.
Well, walking around the House floor, you see representatives on YouTube from time to time, so they are paying attention.
Right.
They're looking at cats hitting balls of string, actually.
I think the thing to watch, you know, just keep your eye on whether there are any open attacks on Paxton or Chisholm. If they become a threat...
Open attacks.
If they become a threat in any way, they'll start getting hit.
Well, but
until they're really genuinely,
and the Strauss stuff is all feel good, positive about Strauss. It's not attacks right. on Paxton and Chisholm.
It doesn't name anybody else.
But I will say the one thing that is reminiscent of a conversation we had in these very chairs a couple months ago. You know, we knew that Patrick Rose had a race when Patrick Rose began spending money like a drunken sailor.
Right.
To defend a seat that was theoretically not in play. Right. He knew something we didn't. Strauss is spending a bunch of money to defend his speakership at a time when he theoretically has more than 50 votes over the number he needs.
Right.
If he doesn't think he's in a race, why buy ads on the Drudge Report? Why put up feel-good videos on YouTube? Why do all that?
Because it's an outside game for the first time. Because Van Taylor's getting 30 calls a day. Because the other members are getting calls from people outside of the House.
So
this used to be an inside game. 150
right.
people in the House, they're voting for class president. Basically the game, right? High school with money. Now it's everybody outside of high school is calling the members of the voting class here and saying, you better do this. You better watch out for this. You know, we got you elected, blah, blah, blah.
But for Strauss spending this money, this would be having more of an impact?
So Strauss has to spend money to dampen that and to say, yeah, I am too fighting. And it's not – the only voices you hear are not those that are opposed to me.
Okay, but it's still, you know, he's still spending a bunch of money on the Drudge Report. I mean, it's, you know
– if he likes the Drudge Report.
And he has the money, right?
I mean,
right.
No one likes the Drudge Report. Come on.
I hate it, but I use it.
Let's shift over to substantively what's going to happen next session. And there's been all sorts of talk about cuts to education, both public and higher education. So, Reeve, our man on the higher education beat
man
joins
in quotes.
Us here.
Our he's up on the hook. Come
you
on,
can reach him from there.
Our boy man.
Whoa. Can we edit this podcast?
No, we can't. Todd's under strict orders to keep it raw.
Reeve, over to you.
Okay, well, yesterday I went to the Texas Association of Business, and the Governor's Business Council put on this big summit on higher education, basically making the argument that the business community really needs to get involved in higher education, which is sort of a reflection of the understanding that higher education is pretty much screwed in the next session unless somebody does something. And the initial 5% cuts that came out of government agencies, which seems like a long time and many cuts ago, about 41% of that came out of higher education. So if you get more and more cuts and more comes
out of higher ed. Even though, as the president of a university in the state of Texas noted to me yesterday, even though the percentage that higher education represents of the overall budget is more like 12%.
Right.
So they took an unbelievably significant percentage of the cuts, but they don't represent nearly that much as a percentage of the budget.
Part of that is they were cutting 5% from the state budget, but not from public education, not from prisons, not from right.
Why doesn't Mac Brown just give up some of his $96,000 a week? You know?
Well, that's sort of a separate deal, right?
Just off the top of your head.
Just off the top of my head, you know.
Well, we'll call him. And
step off, Elise.
Yeah. I mean, that's sort of a separate issue. But, I mean, anyway, so you have this impression that higher ed could very well be in big trouble next session.
How can it not be? I mean, if you think about all the money that can't be touched, the non-discretionary money, if you remove that, there's a huge target on higher ed K-12. And on health and human services, right? Those are the three things that are just going to get gutted because that's where the money is.
Right. And on top of that, the state is in a position where it is not doing a good job of producing graduates, it's not doing a good job of producing high school graduates. You have fewer college graduates than you have high school graduates. We're way behind internationally, if we think of this as a global economy. They showed us this slide yesterday where you see they broke the workforce down into a decade. Having Texas as a country compared to other countries like Japan, New Zealand, just about everything, we were the only ones where the oldest decade had more higher education achievement than the youngest decade.
So the oldest Texans have more
college degrees.
College degrees and all of that.
All of your decades have more than
this mine. This is if you make Texas into a country.
Right.
Right. So you know what the answer is, don't secede.
Right.
Right. So they'll stop doing these dumb statistics.
Well, they're in real trouble because, you know, lawmakers are going to look around and say, I have to cut something. What can I cut with the least amount of screaming?
Yet, if you're business friendly, you're a pro-business lawmaker.
Well, Hammond. Bill Hammond is an example, right?
Very pro-education and not only turning out.
Bill Hammond talks about higher education and workforce development all the time, and he's not the kind of person who is eager to spend taxpayer dollars.
Right, this is the former lawmaker who now has
Texas Association. And he's one example of many. Woody Hunt, who you spoke to for the Tribune on Wednesday. Who is the chair of the Governor's Business Council, El Paso businessman. Again, no liberal, no big spender, believes if we don't spend money and increase productivity from the higher education world, we're going to be screwed.
Right. Really what this means is that you're going to get some of the proposals from the Higher Education Coordinating Board that have sort of met with resistance in the legislature to tweak some of the programs in an effort to squeeze more productivity out of what few dollars they're ultimately allowed to spend, right. Now has the very public backing of the business community and a very, what we presume will be a business-friendly legislature.
And you're hearing that awful word incentivized thrown around now, you know, right. You know, incentivize outcomes, incentivize right. this.
So you might see the way the formula of funding, at least a percentage of it might go more towards graduation. You might see a tweak to Texas grants so that higher achieving high school students get easier access to that than others. So there could be some changes just so that whatever little, the $5 that gets spent on higher education go to people that will definitely graduate.
Well, there's an interesting thing here that business people will tell you and tell us all the time that, you know, higher education is building our workforce and it's really critically important.
Direct
to the
correlation,
but
yeah.
Can you guys remember, I mean, we all know of candidates and candidacies based almost purely on appeals to public education. Can you remember the last candidate who ran primarily on higher education? I mean, it's been
Kay talked about higher education for a long time, except during the campaign when she talked about nothing.
Right, Chris Bell talked about it a lot in 06.
Actually, Senator Zaffirini talked about this specifically yesterday when she just said, hey, look, you know, we have problems and it's going to be hard for anyone in the public or in, even in the legislature to appreciate that because people think of higher education as the fat cats. And I was talking to Red McCombs today, who's a big donor to UT, and he says, well, you know, it was a shock to him when decades ago he was told that he could not rely on the state to provide enough money to make UT a top university, and so he's been giving money ever since. But, I mean, more and more, the public university is going to have to rely on private donors
back to this question of whether tuition should be re-regulated to address some of the affordability and access questions, right?
Well, the issue here is...
But then where's the money to replace the money that would be lost?
That's what I was going to say. I mean, even if you do re-regulate it, where is the money, right?
Right. They deregulated it to basically shift the cost of higher education from state taxpayers to kids and parents who pay tuition.
And those kids and parents are pissed.
Right.
Right.
Well,
but there's not enough of them.
About...
But the political question is interesting because there's not enough of them to do much damage to the people who voted for that tuition deregulation. It was a perfect political vote. It's like, I got all this money in the state budget. I didn't raise taxes. That would have got me killed. I raised tuition. Actually, I didn't raise tuition. I gave the universities the opportunity to raise tuition if they needed to. They raised tuition. I didn't do it. My hands are clean. Yeah.
Can you believe those universities?
Yeah. The very gall.
Right. The Texas... families pay about 58% of the cost of education, and the national average is 51%.
Right, and then you get these situations where, you know, everybody capitalizes it. Not to pick on anybody, but you know, it's because Mac Brown makes a big salary, or it's because Red McCombs will step up and pay for a business school. It's like, why should we pay for it? You know, I mean,
right.
The argument from a political standpoint for higher education is either non-existent or upside down altogether.
What was that country music lyric that you quoted last week? Everybody wants to die, but nobody wants to go to heaven or something like that. Everybody wants to go to heaven,
but
nobody
wants
to
die. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You got that wrong.
Reeve, it was a long night.
Mangled Ramseyisms.
That would be good for the year-end podcast.
All right. All right, we'll note that, and that is pretty much all the time we have for this week's Tribcast. So if you have any questions or comments, you can always email us at podcasts@texastribune.org. For now, on behalf of Evan, Ross, Reeve, and our producer, Todd, I'm Elise. Thanks for listening.